Chapter 11. It's a beautiful, clear morning in New Jersey, and after a complimentary bouncing buffet in the breakfast room, where Poppy and her followers, even Daryl and Richard, were treated with proper hospitality by the motel's other waterbed enthusiasts, it's now time to get back on the road. Marcia Sprinkle may have accidentally outfoxed them once with that little tricky ambulance maneuver, but that will be the last time she escapes, the last time she steals, the last time she'll be a bad parent, the last time she doesn't respect her own mother, the last time she stiffs a stiffy of his rightful wage. Today will be Marcia Sprinkle's last day on Earth, period. Daryl has managed to swipe a couple more Magic Fingers devices from unoccupied rooms before they checked out, and a few of Poppy's followers have taken his bait of hooking themselves up and experiencing a new trembling movement that suddenly seems more alternative than jumping. Poppy, a bouncer purist, has refused to experiment, and you can tell by her slightly sour expression that she disapproves of any wandering away from the original tramp dogma. But others, especially Springboard Sam and Doubleback Barbara, are quivering sideways with newfound glee. Daryl has no desire to rock the boat by challenging Poppy's vertical politics, yet others can see that Richard, now resting softly and quietly and trying to heal, is soothed by the sideways shaking. When they pile into the van en masse, some continue with shaking, but the most loyal to Poppy, Volta and Lipa, only move upward in solidarity. Campolina, always looking for a new diversity to celebrate, takes Daryl up on his offer of a new Magic Fingers vibrating experience as they peel out of the parking lot in the van. Whoa, Richard thinks from the safety of Daryl's underpants, after Campolina plugs herself in and he can feel her starting to vibrate like a human tuning fork. Easy now, Springboard Sam warbles out in a sideways version of a whole lot of shaking going on. You can shake it one time for me, Doubleback Barbara joins in, yodeling like a cowgirl and taking his musical cue. Shake it, baby, shake, bellows out Campolina, ever the diva, shimmying faster than Joey Heatherton herself. You can tell Twisted Billy is I Am Curious too, and when Daryl, undulating laterally, offers him the device, he takes it like a pot-to-heroin gateway drug. Poppy floors it onto the highway and bounces so high inside the van that she hits her head on the roof. It hurts, but so what? She must remain a strong example to all her cultists. Professional trampoline activists must not be tempted to wander sideways. Shaking is but a harmless fad. Bouncing is the only true path to salvation. Marcia hadn't really slept that well. Oh, she had dozed off for a little power nap, sitting up, but you could hardly call that sleep. No one had really bothered her last night, except for that one nurse who asked who she was, but Nurse Nosy went away quickly enough after Marcia patiently explained that she was legal counsel for the Bargain Budget Bus Company, as if they had one. All this family drama going on around Marcia is depressing. Relatives praying, doctors running around with their heroic medicines. The saving of lives seems just plain tedious to her. Would the world be one bit different if all the others on the bus but her died? Admit it, every single one of them would be forgotten soon enough. Even if there really is a God, he couldn't be expected to remember each and every person, could he? She better get out of here just in case he is watching from above. She wouldn't want him to think she was one of them. There's a car. She can see the door isn't locked, and voila, the key is lying there right on the front seat. Don't bus crash victims' families realize you can't rush inside an emergency room and just leave your car like you're some kind of celebrity at valet parking? You have to park it, lock it, and take your keys with you. Just as Marcia opens the front door to take possession, a large dog, who knows what kind, they all look alike, leaps up from the floor on the back seat where it had been lying in wait and bites Marcia on the left hand. Marcia is disciplined enough not to scream, even though she sees the beast's fangs sink into her flesh, but she does attempt to pound the mongrel's face with her one good meat hook. Yet this dog takes his job seriously. and continues to gnaw her hand. Marcia finally manages to disengage her paw from the dog's growling mouth, but she's bleeding, and that is a bore. At least that rather modest orange cocktail dress and brownish trench coat she stole from another patient's room right before she turned in last night didn't get stained. She still looks presentable. Where do you run when there's a worldwide conspiracy against you? There's nowhere to hide when you are bitten by dogs, possibly infected with rabies, wanted by the police, on the news, and outside a hospital crawling with security teams, reporters, and lower echelon accident victims' families. She'd believe in a higher power, but only if she could control him. God, it would feel good to dominate God. Need a lift? Says a perfectly normal-looking white man driving an SUV. Well, not perfectly normal. He's middle-aged, not yet balding, and dressed like many of Marsha's airport victims, but his nose hairs have obviously never been trimmed. They are clean, wiry, and show no trace of mucus, yet remain erect. Could it be possible he thinks these nasal follicles are his fashion signature, like Frida Kahlo's eyebrows? Yes, Marcia replies, pretending to be all needy as she climbs in. A companion dog attacked me, she explains with a straight face, and there's more of them back there at the hospital. I'm afraid to go back. That's just terrible, he says in a loud, clear voice, made possible by his healthy lungs that have been overprotected from germs, funguses, and spores by the extreme forest he's cultivated inside his snout. I'd take him all to the farm, he adds with a wink and a conspiratorial chuckle, before handing her his handkerchief to wrap around her dog bite. The farm. That's a good one. She realizes all men are certifiable, filled with that hormonal urge to invade women, damaged from the weight of their natural-born gristle, humiliated by the downward gravity of their own testicles, and filled with a polluted fluid of life that surges from their eventually cancerous prostate glands. It's amazing they all don't just commit suicide. Hand me my sunglasses, will you? He asks matter-of-factly as they pull back onto the New Jersey Turnpike going north. Marcia looks around but doesn't see them. In the glove compartment, he suggests, like this is some sort of hot buttered beans come to supper children's game. She opens it and freezes. There's a head shoved in there. A woman's head. The driver lets out a cackle. Is this some kind of practical joke? If so, Marcia better go along with it. It looks real. The dried blood could be fake, but the clumsily sawed skin that was once connected to a neck seems fresh and ugly enough to not be special effects. I wonder what your head would look like on a stick, old hairsnout asks with what seems like gallows humor or horrific curiosity. Either way, she had better act. Marcia looks back at the head. For what? Sympathy? Advice? It shows no reaction. How could it, when the last look of terror is frozen onto its face for eternity? But Marcia's not scared, not intimidated. She grabs the head out of the glove compartment with both hands, and maybe it's just her injured mitt, but it's heavier than she had imagined, like the weight of a bowling ball, a big kind with three holes. Good. She slams it into the driver's skull. Once. Twice. Is it her imagination, or does his nose hair shrivel up inside? He tries to fight back a little, but how do you protect yourself when you've just received a concussion from another head? She grabs the steering wheel and veers the vehicle toward the slow lane, cutting off a FedEx truck and a U-Haul Renovan. She's surprised to be already alongside Newark Airport. As a large American Airlines 747 gracefully descends from the sky right over their barely controlled SUV to land on the nearby runway west of the turnpike, she cracks the man's head one more time with his victim's cranium, and it pops open like an overripe coconut. She hopes one of the airline passengers got a split-second glimpse from a window seat of her attack before the wheels touched down on the runway. Just think of the stories he or she could tell in baggage claim. Oh, baggage claim. As Marcia steers the skidding car to a halt on the side of the highway, she suddenly realizes the head had been wearing a wig. Another one? What was this, a night of a thousand wigs? It's ash blonde, too. She's been a regular little Clairol color chart all day. Marcia tries to pull off the fake hair, but it's pinned on so tightly you'd have thought the woman was going skydiving. She yanks, she pulls, she hears the scalp ripping, but the wig finally comes off. Marcia is surprised to see the woman was mostly bald-headed. Must have had ringworm, or, oh well, she's not contagious now that she's dead, right, God? Right, Marcia, must be the correct answer, because as she slips on her new hairdo, a modified shag, I guess you could call it, there it is, a miracle right in front of her. A whole family just a few hundred yards up in the breakdown lane outside their vehicle. She can see Dad is taking a piss in the small area of greenery he might think of as the woods. The few trees are reedy, and the weeds and half-dried grass are but a landing ground for plastic bags, discarded takeout food containers, and cigarette butts blown by the winds of auto pollution. Can't the long-suffering, dumpy wife stop him from pulling a root out in front of his bone-headed children, who Marcia's surprise don't wander out onto the highway absent-mindedly, looking for a four-leaf clover or a lucky penny or some such nonsense? Marcia wants their car, and she wants it now. A Ford Explorer, one of the top-selling automobiles in America. Perfect. Invisible, almost. But Dad's still pissing. That means he's a drunk. Beer, probably. She's not worried about this family seeing her knocked-out traveling companion still behind the wheel of their vehicle. He's propped up with his wounded head turned away. It looks like he's taking a nap. But the other head is a whole different story. She needs to get rid of it, but the only dumping ground is that same damn thicket of underbrush that Dad's standing in, now shaking his shriveled-up penis of the last dribble of dark brown urine. Marcia tightens her own urinary muscles and hurls the severed head towards the lowest patch of this eyesore of a landscape. She hears it hit the hollow trunk of a dead tree. Bonk! 2 points. The mother, who Marcia now sees has buck teeth that should have been put in braces when she was a child, is looking up from a Save-A-Lot bag about to hand a Zero candy bar to her daughter, who Marcia imagines has allowed boys to snap her bra straps at local swap meets almost every weekend. Marcia breaks into a gallop toward them both, even though her hand injury impedes her gait, knowing she must take the family by surprise. Mom and her daughter freeze in confusion as Marcia charges past them to grab open their car door. "Hey, you!" yells the new wave skate turd of a son as he careens over on his board and falls down trying to block her. Marcia ignores his total uncoolness and hops in, knowing the key fob she sees Dumbbell Dad left on the middle console is enough to start the car. "Call AAA," the dad yells, stumbling up the hill beside the highway, still trying to blot the wet spot on the front of his trousers that no amount of shaking could prevent. When the mother runs toward Marcia to try and join her idiot children in attack, Marcia strikes blindly in mortal combat. Yes, with her injured hand. Pow! Right in the kisser. But who would want to kiss Mom now? She's too scary with her front teeth knocked out. The Zero gobbling daughter grabs Marcia by her hair to try and stop her from getting in the car, but it's a wig, bonehead, and it comes off easily, and the girl falls backward and lands on the sharp gravel of the highway. Dad comes charging towards the car like Captain America, yelling something about Geico. The son ignores his heroics and tries to pull Marcia out of their vehicle from the passenger window, but it's too late. It's Marcia's car now. Up goes the electric window, crushing his grimy little fingers at the top. He lets out a long, piercing cry of pain. So does the whole family. And then they do it again. Marcia looks up and wants to do the same. They're right in front of her, outside their van, running towards her in the breakdown lane, is Poppy and her brain-dead bouncers teamed up with Daryl, Richard, and their shaking converts. Look at them. As serious as suicide bombers, yet as ridiculous as a Roadrunner cartoon. Convulsing sideways and leaping upward, they're the ricocheting rockets run amok. The hijacked car's family cannot believe their eyes. Fuck their vehicle. These springing, trembling human vibrators can have it. What's happened to the New Jersey Turnpike? It used to be a nice place. Marcia has had enough of this bullshit. She floors the accelerator and aims straight for Poppy and her cronies. But the vertical and horizontal acrobats know how to judge distance, speed, and the rhythm of horsepower. She can see her daughter's defiant face, but all the shakers, including that bozo Daryl and his dim-witted Dick, start zigzagging back and forth aggressively and moaning eerily, agitated by their power pads of magic fingers. It's downright spooky. Poppy lands from above right in the pathway of Marcia's car, snarls, "Give us back our money," and in the nick of time hurls herself back upward before impact. "God damn it," Marcia howls as she gives the car more gas. Volta lands with a thump on the roof of the speeding Ford, and while it startles Marcia, she continues roaring ahead, seeing Volta in the rearview mirror, landing squarely on her own 2 feet and then springing right on up again all on her own. Worse yet, Marcia can see Daryl and his lust-driven penis ahead, shaking like a leaf, trembling happily, and grinning like Siamese twins on laughing gas, as Springboard Sam and Doubleback Barbara lead the others in some sort of quivering, shaking, electric slide line dance. Let them have their hollow victory, Marcia thinks, as she puts pedal to the metal and imagines them trying to land long enough to pile into their van and give chase. Good luck, you motion morons. Marcia zooms straight ahead, not up, not down, not sideways, right through them, straight to the Holland Tunnel. And you douchebag losers will never catch me.